Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, live from the future. Yes, those of you who listen in the United States onto the live broadcast are listening to us a day behind. Send us your lottery numbers that you have purchased and we will tell you whether or not you have won. Anyway, this is a very, very serious show, as you can tell. I'm just kidding. I get accused of not being serious enough. The way I look at it, there's a hell of a lot of serious people already. I don't think humanity needs one more. Do you agree? Do you think that maybe sometimes we should have a little light relief in the face of all this chaos and madness and scumbaggery? That's kind of the purpose of the show, because it pretty much isn't anybody doing it. And had an entrepreneur on the show the other day, and he says the ideal thing for an entrepreneur is just to pick what you want to do that's different to every way people do it, and just do it better than anyone. I'm trying. Might succeed, might not. It matters not. Because the whole point of resisting isn't about just obtaining victory. It's about taking a stand, regardless of the consequences of it. I've been talking a lot lately about the free man movement, the straw man, or lose the name, win the game, whatever facet you wish to talk about. And the argument seems to spiral out of control because there's this ultimate fear base to resistance. Let me define that. Your brain's hardwired to remember things that you're afraid of. It's a survival mechanism, right? And you can't really name too many people, if any, that have somehow managed to figure out how to get their legal straw man, which is the all capital letter name on your license, which apparently isn't you, it's actually just a corporate entity put up in your name, and getting rid of it. In so doing, they don't have to pay taxes. Nobody can take their stuff. Kind of like in a family trust sense of the word. And in addition to that, trusts have already been set up in everybody's names. And you can, if you know how, walk into a bank and withdraw nearly any amount you want. And they will give it to you. However, consequences happen, and these are real consequences, to everybody who has tried and or succeeded at this. Now that indicates a couple of things. Number one, if you're not getting any flack, that means you're not over the target. So these people have obviously found out something quite important. Number two, you can't expect to take any kind of fight to the New World Order without consequences, legal or otherwise. There's a real sense that control is something that you can get out of your life, that you can live independently, that you don't have to be a slave for wages or benefits, that you can indeed live free of the system. Now, whilst at the same time, these people have come onto something. These consequences I'm talking about are like being arrested, being stalked by police wherever you go, being pulled over almost every time you go down to get a bottle of milk from the shop. Now, I'm not saying that this is a bad idea, going out and doing these things, as a lot of people have accused me of saying. What I'm saying is, once you decide to do this, go down this route, you are on your own. If you have the power by yourself to resist all these general forces of apparatus that will attempt to destroy your life, then you won't really experience that many consequences. And I don't know of anybody who can do that. How many people can overpower a whole bunch of police, SWAT teams, etc.? A woman in New Zealand named Kerry Campbell walked into the Taranaki Savings Bank and withdrew $15 million. You know, just like that. And then, suddenly, she's in a cell with four or five police officers, big police officers, pulling on her arm, trying to dislocate it, trying to break it. But they didn't know she had a titanium rod in it, so they couldn't. We're talking about a small woman against five big guys, and she's a mother of eight. There is no justice in the justice system. Not for people that oppose the corruptness of it. And even then, if you get in your way, it's just being a part of the system. This is when lines get drawn. Some people are more courageous than I. I had a traumatic experience with cops, and I don't care to repeat it. Ever. And won't let myself be put in that position when I know that that's a possible side effect. And that's indeed, ironically, the game of tyranny, is to make people so afraid of the consequences of their actions that they don't stand up. And because of the fact that they don't stand up, these individuals around the world who are standing up by themselves get squashed, crushed, families taken off them, private property, lose their jobs. There's a lot of really nasty things that the control system can do to you. And my argument isn't don't do it. My argument is if you're going to do it knowing what the consequences are. There are many people throughout history who have gone in to sacrifice their time or their effort, or in some cases die, so that those who are born in future generations don't have to. And I applaud each and every one of those people, including those that still live today. What I'm saying is that maybe these people shouldn't be alone. Maybe there needs to be a show of community around these particular individuals who are giving up a lot of their safety and quote-unquote privileges that the rest of us take for granted. Do we owe them something? I think we do. And I've had many of these people who've suffered such consequences on this radio broadcast, specifically to tell their story. And not only that, but to tell others how to do it. But ultimately, this isn't a we'll just show you the solution and it's that easy kind of thing. We're talking about years of research, repetition, the whole gamut of the law is something you're going to have to be able to argue successfully in court with a hostile judge who might also be corrupt. That's how effing good you have to be. And that, I think, is one of the reasons, if not the reason, why the justice system and the police in their pocket behave so atrociously towards these individuals, in some cases holding them without trial, without charge, in solitary confinement for extended periods of time. Light deprivation, sleep deprivation, food, nutrition deprivation. They're trying to break them, but they can't. But just because you're not broken doesn't mean you haven't been used. You ever bought something secondhand, like a camera or whatever? And if you look close enough on the corners and the edges, you can see some of the scratches that have come from somebody else's hands. You can see dents where somebody's bumped it into something. And that's how it is with people as well. This damages who you are, having these kind of things happen to you. In some cases, it's more damage than the than the mind can bear. And your mind reacts when it reaches that breaking point, going back into the animal urges, the fight or flight mechanisms. And in some cases, that damage produces a lot of aggressive behavior. Because I know from personal experience, having been arrested before on a cannabis charge, that when somebody is in front of me talking about how people who use cannabis are stupid or should be arrested, there's no longer a whole lot of thought, patience, or temperament that bestows my mind at that point. It's anger at being misunderstood. It's rage at being misrepresented. It's hate for being oppressed. And if somebody strikes that chord with me, or with anybody, they might experience a lot of words that aren't so nice coming back at them. As if we're trying to make you replicate the pain that we felt because of actions that you approve of. I can understand that. There is, on a number of different fronts, not naming any names, I'm talking about all forms of conspiracy research now. We're talking about political thought, that arena. Is there a left? Is there a right? Is there an anarchy? Is there communism? We're talking about the video world, where people are going out to protests, etc., and putting these things up on the internet for people to see. We're talking about every single vein of the truth movement, to the listeners, to the talk radio show hosts, the YouTubers, the documentary makers. Almost everybody that I've met is damaged in some way. And because of that damage that has been done to them, they dedicated their lives to undoing that damage for other people, because they can't undo it themselves. Because the only way to undo it is for it to not happen. That's why you lay your life down. That's why you get so angry when people question your motives. Everybody should know what I'm talking about if they spend any time on chat rooms, message boards. People are angry, disrespectful, abusive, really not handling it well. This is why I use a little bit of humor, a little bit of fun. Because it can't all be rage. You can't live like that. Your whole body gets into a state. The blood rushes away from your heart and your brain and goes out to your arms and your legs. Just think about that. You know, metaphorically speaking, if you've got less blood in your brain, you're not thinking as clearly, probably. If you've got less blood in your heart, you're probably not feeling that well. Do you know that there's neurons in the heart? A little brain in there controls a whole bunch of other things. This is the complexity when you're dealing with random people, because you don't know which part of them's damaged. You don't know if they're currently an angry person. And we all go through it, and if you haven't been through it, there's something freaking wrong with you, because there's so many things to be angry about. But it's like the grief process, you know. That's like stage 4 of 7, 4 of 8, or whatever the hell it is. I think after the anger part is kind of like this acceptance. And after you reach that level of acceptance, there's something quite magical about it, but something quite tragic. It's like reaching the top of a mountain, only to realize that there's no way down. And you can see everybody else trying to climb up the mountain to be where you are. and there's not enough room on the top. And you feel bad, almost as if you hadn't wished you'd scaled the mountain at all. It's that kind of epic guilt that everybody probably should be feeling. That we're not doing enough, we're not helping enough people, I'm too lazy, I'm not taking care of my responsibilities at home, I'm not fulfilling my dreams, I'm kicking people to the curb instead of offering them a hand. I'm making assumptions about people when I don't know them, never met them, based upon a single Facebook post. And sometimes you get into an argument. You start to realize that, hey, I'm trying to be respectful and make points and actually have some form of argument to this. But this other person is not. Maybe they are to a degree, but they feel that because they're arguing about something important, that it gives anybody who opposes their current worldview a less than human status. And that allows you to justify calling them names, having a chip on your shoulder, blaming them for something, that kind of thing. Now, I hate to use the word ego, because goodness knows I've got one of the most gargantuan there is. But the ego of that, and I'm talking about self-centric ego, not feeling the pain of others, in fact ignoring it, I call it the vampire effect. They can't see themselves in the mirror. They simply can't fathom that somebody would do this and what it would feel like if somebody did it to them. It's almost like the human condition itself is not worth their time. It's almost as if being caring or compassionate is something of a low priority. What does it matter, they say, if you get offended by words that I say? It's just your ego. You see that kind of psychic distortion reversal there? If somebody gets offended because you called them a name, it's because you called them a name, not because, oh, they can't take it properly. It's because you didn't mean it well. If you mean somebody well and they get, you know, crazy or whatever, then sure, they've got an ego problem. But if you actually got malicious intent and you're using like full-on verbal abuse, how is it the ego of the person who's being abused if they don't like it? You know, is it their problem? Why don't you say, okay, here's a couple of things I think you might want to look at, etc., etc. You know, give somebody some advice. Sometimes the best way to educate somebody isn't to call them names and make them feel like an idiot before you start implanting whatever knowledge you think you've got into their heads. I've known too many people that are full of knowledge and also full of themselves. No real compassion. And I think that might be a result, not a doctor, of being traumatized at the hands of the system, or at the hands of the very other people that I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? This great thought occurred to me yesterday. This aha moment, this realization. And it struck me. So awesome. In its magnitude. In its majesty. And its scumbaggery. The entire truth movement is infected to a degree with gossip columns. All right? I'm talking about schoolyard gossip. People going around, little cliques and facets and things of that nature. It's interesting, like, you'd think, and a lot of people do, mistakenly think, that once you stop being a slave and start doing what's right by humanity, that you lose all of those bad habits from your previous life. That you lose all the things that were programmed into you from school, from work, from your parents, from your family, from your, you know, troubled youth. These things are still right here with us. Going through some kind of awakening about what really happens with the world doesn't equal an awakening with what's really going on inside you. And I think it's the responsibility of anybody who professes to dispense information or wisdom or whatever to admit some of your faults. You know, blatant pathological honesty at some point. Show people that you're really human. You're not God. You're not above reproach. You're not 100% reliable. And if you are, then you've got a responsibility to be respectful with your credibility and your all of that. How many people who are, you know, considered credible, etc., poo-poo everybody who they talk to behind their back? No, can't really think of it too many of them. It's pretty straightforward like that. People don't like it because it reveals faults in themselves that you're not revealing in yourself. It's like in Ghostbusters, the door swings both ways. Whatever you put into it, it can come rushing right back out again, right in the face. And you'll get hunted down by whoever you've badmouthed in a private conversation, you know, and they go and snitch on you, and then that person comes down on you like a ton of bricks. Well, you didn't want to make anything public or whatever, you're just expressing your private opinion about somebody else with somebody you didn't know. Doesn't sound like a pretty brilliant idea, is it? Especially if you're interested in maintaining peace and harmony. However, you can tell a lot about people by how they react. Do they react by calling you up and saying, hey, I heard you said all this stuff about me, man, and you know, that's not fair. And I want to set the record straight because a lot of the stuff that you said just wasn't true, and I want to talk to you about it. Oh, my God. Is that not balanced? Is that not cool? And then there's the other kind of reaction, or at least one of the other kinds of reactions, where it's a threatening, attacking, abusive, nasty, long spreads of dozens of different messages full of insults and that kind of thing. And even if you apologize and promise to never do it again, they're still not happy. And they never will be. Because they've never apologized for anything that they've done. So why should an apology from anyone else mean anything to them? You see how that works? It's kind of like how a cult works. I had this, the pleasure, quotation marks, of meeting a man in New Zealand who was working with Black Power Gang. And he was trying to do the free man, straw man type thing, but not for the intended purpose by which the creators of the movement did. He kind of wanted to not have the law be able to touch him or any of his operations while he was working with gangs. Yeah, you understand what kind of a creepy, scary kind of person you might be dealing with here? Yeah, that's about the size of it. And you can think about threats and yelling and grabbing you by the collar and holding you up and stuff. And then getting his little goons to like stand over you and threaten you and say that they're going to come to your house. And this is before you expose them with a camera. I don't like that. You know, again, back to that mirror effect, the vampire, not being able to see their own reflection. they can see themselves on video just fine. And they don't like what they see. It's not that they don't approve of what they did. It's that they don't like people seeing them do it. That's why they behave so aggressively in order to quell anybody who questions or criticizes them. To make them afraid so that they won't do anything. Does this sound familiar all of a sudden? It's the exact same tactic the establishment uses to quell people who are getting out of the system. That same sickness is infecting this movement. I don't know what people want to call it. I just call it the broad, you know, the truth movement. Because ultimately, who could be against the truth movement? What are you going to be opposed by, bro? The BS movement? The fallacious movement? The nonsense movement? The aggro movement? Whatever label you want to put on it. If we can't look at ourselves and see our own faults, our own flaws, and be able to deal with them, and be able to treat other people with respect and dignity and class, then if our revolution is successful, we will create a system just the same, if not worse, than the thing we were struggling to fight against. Really is the question asked, what are we going to do once the revolution is over? What kind of a system are we truly going to have? What kind of people are going to be involved in the makeup of this? Are we going to keep the old structures, or are we going to tear everything down and start anew? People are concerned, they're afraid, because the situation is very dire and serious. For me, it was pretty black and white. If you don't resist them, you're going to get exterminated anyway. You know, once I kind of got that idea in my head, it was pretty straightforward. Okay, guess I can't wear my giant dollar sign belt buckle with the cubic zirconias encrusted into it on the white metal anymore. Guess I can't wear that $100 bill belt buckle either. I guess I can't be going out and partying every weekend and blowing $100 for like 3 beers at a bar. Does anybody drink at bars anymore? Like, unbelievable. Unbelievable. But anyway, side issue. Sometimes the things that you enjoy, you have to give up in order to become who you are. Really. Because ultimately, sometimes the things that you enjoy are a distraction. You know what the saddest thing is? Most people don't know what they enjoy. They know what dulls the pain of not enjoying life. Booze and goodness knows what else. But ultimately, we're not happy. You know? And I understand that, you know, being exterminated isn't exactly a rosy thought. Imagine it. Yeah, wherever you are right now, just imagine your home or your parents' home. Somewhere where there's like little children or old people or pregnant women, that kind of thing. Yeah, imagine a whole squad of dudes in full militarized police gear busting through the front door with a battering ram, grabbing all your family, dragging them out onto the street, tying their hands behind their back, getting them to kneel down on the pavement and point guns at their heads and fire. That's what you really got to be thinking about in the back of your mind, I reckon. You know? I'm not saying be afraid or whatever. Just know what you're fighting against. Know what you what you're trying to prevent. And know what you're actually contributing into the pool. Sometimes it's better to just walk away, not say anything. Just leave things as they are. But not anymore. Because nothing's going to be left like it is. You know. Is that not obvious by now? To anybody who's lived more than 12 minutes or worked more than 4 hours in their life, that things will never be the way they were. They never have. You can only move forward. I was saying yesterday, there is no tomorrow. Tomorrow's never going to get here. All you've got is today. And all you've got is the chance to live it right now. Because ultimately, you can't relive it like it was yesterday, can you? And you can't put it off like tomorrow can. You don't really have a whole lot of options, is what my brain told me when I realized how corrupt, or even realized the first or one or two levels of just how corrupt everything is. I don't understand how people can be so totally sure of anything anymore. So totally sure of anything that they will defend things they don't know. That they will attack people they've never researched into. You know? Isn't that pretty strange? It's kind of like the knee-jerk reaction to all information. Oh, he said this. Oh, emotional response. Pa-pow! Typed it out as quick as you can. Whoosh! You know, people don't realize that words can hurt. And that lack of empathy with so many people on the internet, you know, you generally don't deal with this quite so much in person because the majority of our social interaction is now online, isn't it? And if a good portion of that social interaction is really nasty, I don't know. Imagine if that was reflected among the general populace, that you could actually go door to door and work out who and who is not a douchebag. And the ratio of the light. What is it? 20% douchebag, 4% psychopath, you know, 30% completely uninformed about anything. Well, what was it George Carlin said? He says, think about how stupid the average person is. And then imagine that the reality is that about half of people are even dumber than that. We watched this video posted by Fox News, of all people, about Independence Day. And they were asking these people on a beach, you know, about simple questions like, who did the United States overthrow in order to become independent? Or what were the two sides of the Civil War? Who did the United States fight in World War II? Who won the Cold War? These kind of simple, basic, historical questions, which people could say, okay, it was King George, the North and the South, Germany, and we won. Pretty straightforward, wouldn't you think? But no, the answers are like Germany, China, or France, or, you know, person after person after person, and no clue what their country's history is all about. Now, I know that sounds really strange and kind of infuriating coming from a New Zealander, but the reason why I think I can be qualified in saying all of this and reporting it is because the Americans that I talk to are bemoaning the stupidity of their own people as well. You know? I'm pretty sure we can all agree that America has been deliberately dumbed down. And it's, you know, somebody was like going, oh, you're abusing Americans. And it's like, no, I'm not, bro. That's like saying a rabbit got shot in the head with a .22 rifle while some kid was hunting. And then blaming the rabbit for getting shot in the head. Okay? It's been a really well put together scheme. Over a real long period of time. All the things in the water, all the drugs everybody's on, all the trash and low IQ TV, the 14-year-old reading level on all the newspapers, every attempt that could have been made to dumb everybody down has been made. short of giving you permanent brain damage. They just give you long, slow brain damage the whole time. And it's not like anybody else is freaking exempt from this. I've seen videos from the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada as well. None of us English-speaking nations and people and the man of the street kind of interviews seem to know what we're talking about. Now, the other element in this is editing. What gets left on the cutting room floor? Because I have spoken to a number of news agencies at protests and things of that nature, given cogent arguments, evidence. And what do they show on the news? The most ignorant person they can find, and the most simple, ridiculous, and irrelevant explanations that they could possibly come across. See, and again, this is another side and another facet to not only the dumbing down, but the corruptness of the people doing it. Incidentally, the Fox News news source misspelled a few words in the headlines and following article. So you can't really blame people at this point for not being that bright. And if you are fooled into thinking that you are in fact intelligent, just remember there's probably a hell of a lot of people brighter than you, and you've got a hell of a lot to learn still. That's my motto. I'm only 30 years old. I'd be damned if I'd ever claim, even at the age of 90 or 105, that I know it all. Man who thinks he knows it all obviously knows nothing. The man who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough, though. When you're talking about these dynamic situations in terms of a revolution and the social engineering sort of coming at each other head to head, where do we stand? It's kind of like the tortoise and the hare. Are you the rabbit who's been asleep for a while under a tree, relaxed, thinking that nothing, there's no way that that slow moving tortoise is going to beat you? Is that where you are? Well, you got to wake up and you got to get out into the hot sun out from the shade of that tree. And you're going to have to sweat and you're going to have to run hard if you want to beat that tortoise to the finish line. Now, I believe in the moral of the story is that slow and steady wins the race. But I have seen so many pool games, so many games of dice, and so many things that defy statistical expectation that happen in everyday life. And that's what gives me hope. Maybe a fool's hope. But as long as you feel that there's at least some kind of chance, as long as you're not resigned to doom, you can probably keep yourself motivated. Speaking of being motivated, it's really quite a setback if you finish a project and then something bad happens directly after it. And I was on the phone just before the show today with a friend of mine named Eric Reese. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. It's like South African and stuff. It's like A-R-I-K-R-E-I-S-S. And it actually embarrasses me that I can't pronounce it properly. Anyway, he finished a documentary. A freaking amazing, spectacular documentary called Drug Lord. L-A-W-E-D, meaning Drug Law Education. And what he did with this documentary is precisely what I'm planning on doing with my documentary that I'm making, is talk about a New Zealand story, but in relevance to American culture. Because let's face it, America's where it's at. This is where the front line is. This is where the legalization is happening. This is where people are online more than anybody else. This is where a big audience is. America really is the center of power of this little universe we call planet Earth, isn't it? Now, when you think about it, you got these interesting little examples from countries like New Zealand, which people in the United States who are knowledgeable about the topic of cannabis law reform and cannabis history would say, oh my God, that's just like what happened at this place with this person at that time. It's like the same system of prohibition affects both countries, even though it was only one country that came up with the original prohibition because of a bunch of corrupt scumbags who are afraid about their forestry interests, who hated Mexicans and blacks and jazz. And incidentally, got heaps of money from the booze and tobacco industry, who didn't like competition. Kind of like the Rockefeller family. And lo and behold, whole world. Oh, thank you, United Nations. You gem of an organization passing a law that made pot illegal pretty much everywhere. That's quite nasty, isn't it? Well, it's not surprising, really, when you consider who donated the land to build the United Nations building on. It was John D. Rockefeller. What a nice fellow. And also, who was the first Secretary General? Well, he was a former Nazi Party member. What a nice dude. Yeah, it's pretty surprising, isn't it? Not. You ever notice that almost everything you're told about everything is like the direct opposite of what you're told? Isn't that infuriating? And you come after like 20 years of education and thinking you know what you're talking about? You're wrong. As soon as you know what you think you're talking about, you're wrong. It's like a cosmic joke, isn't it? Sometimes you catch yourself being sure of something. Oh, I definitely know this is real. Sorry, bro, it's BS. Oh, no. It's just our primitive understanding. What have we evolved, man? We've gotten over the age-old adage of getting dumber by the generation. Beyond a joke, innit? How an entire generation can be brainwashed into thinking that something that was used for every subsequent generation's very survival and medicine and cooking and like goodness knows how many industrial uses could suddenly think, ah, you know, it's really bad, we don't want that anymore. In fact, we should put people in prison for doing it. Facepalm. And sometimes one face palm's not enough. That's when you need a double face palm, you know. It's almost a Macaulay Culkin-esque thing, but except you've got two hands over your right. Anyway, when you're thinking about drug law reform, you've got to think about the people who are actually putting the effort in to educate people about what really happened. And that's what Arik's documentary has done. It has taken from start to finish, more or less, the entirety of the drug war. And he's split it into a number of parts so that each and every section of the documentary explains one particular element, a crucial, an important, in-depth element about the drug war's wide-reaching effects and the evidence that stands in the face of the public policy governing it. And guess what? After goodness knows how many years, I think I met Arik like over 5 years ago, he finally got the documentary together. And then he gets hit by a car. And he's on a motorcycle. Car comes screeching at him. And it pins his knee to his motorcycle. And it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty at all. So just when he needs to be up and about and around, doing screenings, promoting things, he's being given Oxycontin for the pain in a hospital bed and trying to force himself to do what little he can from a computer to sell his DVDs of his documentary and to get help. And you can show this documentary to anybody, And if they have two brain cells to rub together, it'll click with them in a massive way. This is something that's very important. It's kind of the responsibility of people, if they're having problems in this world at all, to do with cannabis prohibition, which causes a lot more harm than the drug, if you can call it a drug. Then this documentary really needs to go out there. So I want to encourage people, I'm going to try and help Arik out as best I can. I mean, he can't really do much, so I'm going to... Well, I made this meme for him, and it was the Justice Minister, Simon Power. And I'll probably fudge the statistics off the top of my head, but alcohol was responsible for 60% of weekend medical call-outs, emergency services or something like that, maybe 30%, and 50% of homicides, and a high percentage of crimes, police call-outs, that kind of thing. Alcohol does a huge amount of damage, a huge amount. And the family violence, 35%, something around there. So you got family violence, murder, criminal behavior, and injuries, and death. That is the side effect of an alcohol-induced culture. You go into any piss shop, you will see row upon row upon effing row of wines, liquors, beers, ciders, of any make, model, and description. And of course they sell tobacco as well. Hundreds of choices, hundreds of options. It surrounds you so completely that you don't even know it's there. Have you ever been into a walk-in chiller? One of those really massive ones at the giant like outlet store size things, the size of a freaking Kmart. And you see the wider range of this stuff. And you start to get a picture, if you're thinking about it, just how hypocritical this law really is, and just how desperate the need is to completely legalize it, stop persecuting all the medical victims just because they're allergic to all the pharmaceutical drugs and or don't like the horrific side effects like brain seizures and death and liver failure, doesn't make them criminals. And if they're in a wheelchair and require so much medication to dull the pain that they can't even move, and you bust them because they were smoking a joint instead, which gave them mobility, didn't cloud up their judgment or whatever, and really healed and helped them, and you bust them and you wheel them into court, you mess up their life like that, who the hell do you think you are? You've got to be freaking kidding me. The inhumanity of it. A lot of people will go, oh, wow, that just doesn't make sense. It makes a hell of a lot more sense if you're a psychopathic scumbag. I'll tell you what. A friend of mine asked me this a question in the car once. It's like there's these questions. I think there's a list of 20 of them or whatever. And it's like they're not like multiple choice questions. They're like, you've got to come up with the answer. And they tell a little story or whatever and then just see something happening to somebody. You know what happens in that movie Blade Runner? How they've got that little story about the turtle on its back, but you don't flip it onto its stomach. You don't help it. Why do you do that? And give you the open-ended question. And he goes nuts and shoots the guy. It's because they're these psychopath questions. Figure out who you really are. And I thought that was just very, very interesting. Because you, as a normal person, you would fail every single one of these questions because you've got a conscience. You couldn't figure out why you wouldn't help the turtle. But psychopath will find a justification just like that. And this is how the entire drug war started, by psychopathic criminal scumbags who are completely nuts and drunk on power. And we're still living with the remnants of that today. We're living in Nixon's shadow. The guy who said, I am not a crook, those guys, Woodward and Bernstein, are just conspiracy theorists. And then he later on finds out he's a crook.
engaged in a conspiracy. You can't make this stuff up, bro. There are dark things that lurk in the shadows. The night is dark and full of terrors. These people will come in the night. They will come in the dawn. Whatever. And they will mess your life up, son, because you've got a plant that never killed anybody. You evil scumbag. I mean, my goodness. What's the New Zealand per capita arrest rate? The highest in the freaking world? We've only got 4 million people here. And we get somebody arrested for pot every 30 minutes. When you pass a joint to somebody, that's a crime. If they take the joint, that's a crime. And if they pass it on to somebody else, that's another one. There's an extremely conservative estimate that in New Zealand, there are 202,000 times that cannabis laws are broken every day. Some would speculate that there are millions of times a day. Utter disrespect for the law. Nobody respects a law that's stupid. You know how dangerous that is? For people to not respect law and order? It's out of control, isn't it? It's beyond a joke that people have to go through this kind of thing. It's unfair to the people who are being prosecuted, persecuted, having their lives destroyed. Think about the impact. How many people go into jail and never go back? Smaller percentage than the level of people who go to jail and then come back eventually. Justice system isn't working. The prisons are privatized. So you're literally making money off of slave labor while the county pays people $200 a day to keep people in a prison cell for no reason at all. The insanity of it rivals that of the Cliffs of Insanity from The Princess Bride. I just can't understand it because I'm not a psychopathic criminal scumbag. And that's ultimately it. I don't want to control people. I don't want to dominate people. I mean, people will be forced to do anything that they don't want to do. Or convince them calmly and encourage them or whatever. But you can't really force people to obey something they don't agree with, because that's just not cool, bro. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back after the break at freedomslips.com and the vinnyeastwoodshow.com. Thanks very much for listening. Catch you after the break. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. If you want to keep it on the air with all of the various eclectic hosts that are on the network, then please go to freedomslips.com and make a donation today. Sometimes you kind of have to give a little bit of yourself, and you don't. I don't know what it is about supporting people that makes individuals act so generously, you know? Like supporting people that have helped you in some way or whatever. It's quite interesting to me because just recently I have been trying to raise money for my documentary. And what's been difficult about that is the computer that I currently have is simply not up to the task. It's a couple years old now. Things wear out. And also technology gets better. And you find out that the old technology you were once using is simply not up to grade anymore. And it simply cannot do what you need it to do. And that's what happened to me. In the midst of it, just going, you know what? I need a full HD camera, bro. Like a Virch cinema quality one. But I got no money. I need a new computer, bro. I need, like, something that is so powerful that I can do a full-length documentary on it without too much delay. And I don't have any money for that either. What I do have is a reputation, public standing, a radio audience, a website, a 100,000 hits on YouTube every month, give or take. And I think, or at least I thought at the time, and time has proven me wise, that that people would respond if I asked them to help me to purchase these things. So I started in Christmas, and I got just enough over Christmas in order to buy the new camera. And then I started up again just a couple of days ago, and somebody came round with 6,000 New Zealand dollars in $100 bills to pay for the new computer. And here's the kicker. He can't even afford it. He works real hard during the year, and then towards the end of the year, he has this real dry season in his work, and that's why he's got, you know, this cash just kind of sitting there, because it's what he lives off at the end of the year when there's no work. So he thought that I needed to start making this documentary right away, that I need that equipment right away. So he gave that to me without really strings attached, in the hopes that other people would hear about this and be motivated to make similar kind of contributions, so that before the end of the year, even as soon as possible, that can go straight back to him, so that he doesn't have to worry about what he's going to live off. You know, taking that kind of a risk with that kind of an amount to make sure that I've got the equipment I need to make a documentary and all the rest of the stuff that I do totally blows me away. It should totally blow you away too. And I mentioned this to one person. He put 1500 US into my account. Need 4000 US total, mind you. And I spoke to another guy, and he put 500 US in my account, and that was within 24 hours of each other. And if that happens two more, if there are two more people out there who are willing to give and not be able to get back something, so that I can get all this done and have no moral qualms about it or whatever, it would blow me away too. And people get surprised when they hear stuff like that. You know, I'll tell somebody and they're like, holy cow. It's like, they don't realize how much credit I have in the community bank. I've done so much for so many people that when I need something, even just one thing, I usually get it back. Sometimes it's a struggle to survive on a daily basis, but if I'm surviving, I don't ask for help. If I need something that I just simply cannot get on my own, then I ask for help. And everybody should behave this way. You know, I was talking about a doc. So if you want to do something to help me get that equipment I need to put this documentary together, I'd really, really appreciate it. Now, some of you might be asking, what's this documentary going to be about? Well, almost about everything. There's a few core areas of comprehension in the way global events happen and the way global schemes are put into play. You know, we're talking banking, climate change, Agenda 21, Codex Alimentarius, the health system, secret societies, suppression of the human consciousness, you know, even getting into there. And about stories, historical instances where people have really resisted and actually won their freedom. This is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, because everybody makes documentaries about one subject so that you can understand one subject in its entirety. And I'm not most people. My mind is kind of, it's sort of like a Rubik's Cube for words sometimes. Somebody can, and I've proven this many times in person when making this claim, but but that, of course, whenever you make a claim that you can do something, somebody will stump you with something. But you could tell me a story. You know, doesn't matter how long it is, doesn't matter how much details it is. And I can get to the point where I understand enough about the story where I can tell your own story back to you in a very clear and concise fashion without leaving any of the important details out. The gift of summary, I call it. Now, that is something that is so much needed, I believed, in this general awakening process that we're trying to go through as a broader sense in humanity, right? So if you're getting, let's say, 16 subjects, and they're all interlocking, and they all make sense, and it's all in a story, and you've got compressed sentences that are full of facts, we're not talking about proving to you, etc., and going through the minutiae about how everything came to be and what's it all about or whatever. Just talking about the bullet points, the main things you need to know in order to comprehend the situation, where it came from, what it's currently doing, and what its future plans are, and how it connects into the global web of information and scumbaggery. Pretty straightforward. If it's done in a story, sometimes you can get a lot more out of something that has a cohesive link to everything else without complicating it and without oversimplifying it, but getting it accurate so that these people that I'm planning on interviewing are going to, in part, be writing the scripts themselves. I'm going to be getting bullet points off of them about all these topics, and compressing, contorting, and reworking everything on the phone with them. And then we're going to come up with that piece of the script, these perfect bullet points. And then later on, just have to rearrange all the bullet points in order. It's a very complex part, that one. I did my 6 minutes, John Key exposed in 6 minutes video. Blew people's freaking mind. Because you'd be surprised how much facts and bad stories about somebody who's a real bad dude in a very complex industry you can fit into 6 minutes, especially if you're speaking relatively quickly in a rehearsed format. In so doing, you're being hit with a machine gun of information, something that will literally batter you until you're down on your knees and you cannot resist it. You're forced to accept it. But peppered, mind you, with a little touch of irony here or there, or a lame pun. Because, let's face it, if you're getting a whole lot of information and not much of it is very comforting, you need to laugh a little bit at it. You need to see the insanity of it. You need to be able to shed that fear so that you're not paralyzed by it. So that you are catapulted into action. And that's why the final section of the film is truly about the actions people can take, the very simple daily activities that you can implement that will make a difference in this world. You'd be surprised. Even talking to a child nicely counts as doing something against the New World Order agenda. Helping somebody with their car that's broken down or something is against the New World Order agenda. Anything that you could possibly think of that doesn't involve being a taker, a hater, or an abusive scumbag is inherently against the New World Order agenda. But you have to be doing something. Sitting around doing nothing is not against the New World Order agenda. That's simply being a spectator. If you're listening to radio shows and things of that nature, how many hours a week do you listen to? Versus how many hours a week do you create your own content or go out and of your own recognizance and take activities or hard questions or something of that nature to the agents of the New World Order in your midst? Or the brainwashed people that don't think that such a thing even exists. And sure, you'll get spit on and attacked and called a conspiracy theorist. But I'd rather do that than get exterminated, you know. But that's me. Oh, you know, for me, it's not really a hard choice. Maybe because I've made it into a black and white decision. And let's not forget that not everybody can do something like make a documentary or whatever. I mean, I scarcely say not everybody, you know. I'm sure maybe everybody could make a documentary if they were born into the right environment, had all the right equipment and blah, and blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. But unfortunately, we weren't all born so privileged, were we? And so it's a burden of those who are so privileged to do something for other people, isn't it? And we've all got a skill like that. Well, most of us do, I think. Something that you can do better than other people can do, or at least reasonably well, that can really help people in their lives or whatever. Because it's really strange to me that you'd have any kind of talent and use it for nefarious purposes and self-gain. I mean, self-gain, don't really have much of a problem with, but nefarious purposes, deception, etc., not a good move. Not a good move. And then when you're listening to these people on the radio, you know, I used to be a member of the audience too. Don't even really listen to much of anything anymore. I'm too freaking busy making my own stuff. 100 little side projects. But anyway, you kind of lose touch after a while, don't you? You kind of think, you know, I've learned enough. I think it might be time to switch it off. Go out and do something. Really get into the swing of things, because knowledge without application is nothing. Right? Oh, I know this. Really? Have you done it before? Well, no. Then you don't really know it. You know? I got a call from a guy I met at a couple of protests just this morning, actually. And he wants to put his story out onto a video. And he's like asking me all these questions about how do I do this, and I'm not sure if I'm going to do it all perfect or everything. And I was like, what equipment should I use? And I was just like, well, bro, use whatever equipment you got. Do it in any way you want. Send it to me. I'll edit it up so it's nice and concise and pretty, etc. And then you got nothing to worry about. Because it's, do you know how, if you're waiting for perfection, you'll never start anything. But if you just get stuff going, if you just get the ball rolling, if you just start doing whatever you want with whatever it is you've got, you'll get stuff done. It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? It might not look very professional, but as I said, there's a lot of people who accuse me of being pretty unprofessional. By the way I look at it, the world's currently full of people who are professional, and they're running the world. How's that working out for you? You know? Who cares what other people think? Who cares if you make a mistake? It's one less mistake you'll make later on. That's the way you got to look at it. Get your experience, get into it, start doing it. You don't need help or advice or anything. Use your basic understanding of how to get stuff done. And then mentors will start appearing, people who actually know more than you about what it is that you're doing. They just turn up. I'm not kidding. It'll happen. And the same thing's about money. If you don't have any money, exactly how much you need at the end of the week will turn up at the end of the week. Strange that, isn't it? Happens for a lot of people. Except, of course, the people who, you know, spend up large and try to be irresponsible with their money. Because it's beyond a joke, really. If you've got too much time on your hands and you're not doing anything productive with it. I don't understand that, you know. Certain people can literally spend months or years at a time going from their job home, stuck in traffic, and then spend the rest of the time while they're at home doing nothing, not making anything. It's really unfortunate, isn't it? Which is why it's good to have a cause. I remember I had a, what's his name? I forget his name. But anyway, this dude I'm referring to now, worked for a recruitment agency. He owned the place. I was referred to him by my former employer after he terminated my employment contract. Because I don't know about you, but people take me under their wing just like that. You know, I'm very grateful for the support people give me. Because I need it, you know. Who doesn't want or like support? But anyway, what this guy told me is that there's kind of like four elements to your life that you sort of have to keep balanced in some way, so that if that way, if one of the legs gets kicked out, the table doesn't fall on the floor and spoil your dinner. You know, like let's say, for example, you've got a good family environment, you got a good job, you're doing a bit of volunteering on the side, and you've got a social activity like you play team sports or something like that on the weekends. All right. So that way, if you lose your job, you don't lose all your friends. If you lose your family, you've still got your job that you can provide you some income and so on and so forth, and that your friends will be there beside you, that kind of thing. It's about having that sort of balanced existence. And naturally, I didn't take his advice, and I just went all into the volunteering. And lo and behold, all those other elements actually started turning up, you know. And a lovely wife, she's got a nice family. My family become more involved in my life recently, and I don't know. It's kind of when you take charge of your life, the pieces just sort of fall together. I'm kind of grateful for my existence a lot of the time. A lot of people aren't grateful for their existence, and they freaking well should be. And they shouldn't waste it. But anyway, what more is there to say? I believe that news keeps people on edge, especially up-to-date news. There's all these headlines coming at you. And you know what I've found about reading headlines? Watching the news? I don't get better informed. I just get more angry. Because half the time I watch a news a source or read an article, and I know more about it than the person doing it. Which frustrates me, because I don't consider myself to be the tippy top of the intellectual elite. I'm not stupid. Can be a little bit, you know, callous and belligerent sometimes. But it's kind of like an insult to your intelligence. You ever feel like that when you're watching the news and you feel like, these guys are taking the piss. They're taking the mickey out of me. Oh, dearie. Freaking scumbag. Lying all the time. What's he talking about now? Oh, he's a terrorist attack, is it? Probably the FBI. Yep, it was the FBI. That kind of thing. Sitting there yelling at fictional characters. And that's what these reporters are. They're fictional characters. Fictional characters. There's nothing real about them. They're all done up in their makeup. They're all rehearsed. They've got all their scripts and everything. It ain't off the cuff. You're not really hearing who they are as a person speaking through those little lapel microphones that they've got while they're sitting at the news desk, reading their lines. Like an actor who didn't author the script. That's all they are. That's all we all are. According to Shakespeare, all actors living on the same stage. And I find it interesting when you put people up on pedestals like that, right? You know, you try arguing with a skeptic who don't equally apply their skepticism to anything, mind you, that the establishment says, you know. If it's alternative to the standard mode of thinking, then they're skeptical of it. Now, a lot of people think that there's a difference between skepticism and cynicism, and there absolutely is. The problem is that most skeptics are cynical. They can't make up their mind on anything unless somebody tells them to make up their mind on it. And they'll get really riled up and they go, oh, how dare you, I think for myself, really. When was the last original idea or invention or something that you came up with that nobody else has done the equivalent to? No, nothing? Thought not. Because you're living vicariously through the knowledge of others, bro. You're not really letting it sink in. not having enough time to ponder. You're too busy working and recovering from working and recovering from sleep deprivation on the weekends to have any time to sit around and think for yourself. The hell kind of a life is that? And you're going to tell everybody else that you know how to think and they freaking don't? Yeah. Yeah. Give me a break, son. You've got to be freaking kidding me. Why is it that the pillars of society are usually the worst scum of the barrel? It can't be a bad apple. It's got to be a bad barrel. That's what it is. The whole time, indoctrinated. Oh yeah. Nobody has any choice. You know, it's like you're still at school. It's like you're still living at home with your mum. And in some cases, these university graduates are. Now, I've not got nothing against university. Well, actually, I do. In fact, I've got something against almost all forms of education. Namely, because they're boring as hell. All right, I mean, you know, people wonder why kids hate school. Because it's freaking boring! Have you even been to school? Have you ever been in front of a dull, talentless tosspot who couldn't explain their way out of a paper bag if their life depended on it for hours on end? Sometimes there's two periods in a row. 2 whole hours. That's like a mission. You could spend time watching a documentary instead. And that's what I started doing when I went to university. They showed me this thing called a video lab. And it's basically just a library with all these videos and educational stuff all over the place or whatever, the things that the students need to watch for their papers, etc. And headphones and a DVD player and a little 14-inch TV and little cubicles and things. And I was sitting there watching these documentaries and stuff instead realizing that these were a lot more enthralling, a lot more informative, and a lot more valuable than any amount of 1 hour lecture. Because people spent a hell of a lot of time making a documentary. I'm dreading the prospect myself, having not gone through the full process before. It's not like I haven't made 3,000 videos that are like an hour and a half long or spent, you know, 3 nights up cutting together people's slideshow presentations for them with 2 camera angles and 2 audio sources and switching them back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Oh my God. The editing process. It is long. It is arduous. But boy, oh boy, do you get lost in the K-hole sometimes. I mean, like really, you'll be sitting there and it's your job to, like, cut these tiny little chunks on either side of somebody's sentence where they pause for a little bit. And there's hundreds and hundreds of these tiny little pauses in everyday speech. We all do it. We all say and ah and or pause and what have you. But if you can edit all that out, sounds perfect. Beautiful. Like you're reading from a script. But it was totally unscripted. But just edited. See what I'm saying? You can say anything you want in a camera. Anything. And if you're a good enough editor, you can make it come out clear as crystal, beautiful, and enthralling. And that takes a shockingly large amount of work. You know, it's unbelievable how much work it is. You can sit there, look at the clock, and go, oh, it's 6 o'clock. I think I can probably finish this video pretty soon. Look back at the clock. Oh, it's midnight. Midnight? You know, you just wonder where 6 hours went. It's like disappeared into the ether. But you got this really nicely edited video working for you. And that can actually now educate and or help other people to reach higher levels of awareness of stuff. You don't put that amount of work into a single day at a university lecture. I mean, sure, you'll prepare a script and a couple of slides and things of that nature. But you can't put in an hour of one person talking what you can put in 1 hour of a documentary, can you? Just not possible. And so when you watch documentaries every day, as I was starting to do, you get this incredible this rocket launch of information coming at you, going straight into the stratosphere, and you're sitting there, and day by day you're changing as a person because you're not only understanding different things about yourself by studies about these different topics and what have you, but you're understanding different things about the world and your place in it at a geometric rate. Universities don't want you to do that. They don't. Well, at least I'd say that if I was a educational institution who gets paid thousands of dollars by students to sit there at boring lectures, I wouldn't like those people to, instead of paying me, the university owner or whatever, to educate them, them get shockingly large amounts of documentaries for free online and obtain a much better, faster, more incredible education. Or at least access to all the information. Because, you know, researching into things, reading books, doing bibliographies and scholarly white papers and things of that nature, reading through all the convoluted language of the textbooks, of droning on hours upon hours, it's just there, you know, or at least it was my belief, that it's just there to dull my brain. To dull it, you know? Your mind is sharp, but the longer you get bored, the more dull your mind becomes. You're not getting inspired. You're not reaching new levels, are you? How can people think that this is called education? So almost the antithesis of what education should really be. And there's so many movements now that are propping up all over the place with an alternative view of education. And guess who opposes them? Yeah, mainstream education, mainstream universities. We don't want anything different. We don't want anything new. We don't want anything that works. Because if we had that, then all of you stupid freaking slaves that we indoctrinate wouldn't accept your programming anymore. And it would make it so much harder to maintain control of you and to force you to control your own behavior and watch what you say and watch what you do all the time so that we don't have to. You're your own jailer. That's basically what's going on here, isn't it? We've been turned into the guards of our own prison. I'm defending my indoctrinated beliefs. I'm defending them. Defending them against what? The truth? Justice? Liberty? Evolution? Discovery? What is it that these institutions have to be so proud of? Oh, our graduates make on average an extra $1 million a year. Really? Well, let's have a look at all those graduates that actually do make over $1 million a year. Turns out there's not many of them. But there's a couple of them that made hundreds and billions of dollars and what have you after going to university and dropping out or getting their degree and then just going, well, that was freaking worthless, and then went and did what they wanted, a couple of $1,000 short when they went in and a couple of years behind what they could have gotten up to. You see what I'm saying? And almost everything's like that. That same kind of system. I keep telling people this. Fractal scumbaggery. It's the scumbaggery. You look into one kind of scumbaggery, and suddenly the pattern will start repeating itself and over again. That's how the education system works. What do you spend most of your freaking developmental years in? An educational institution. Well, do you think you can unlearn all that all of a sudden? You know? That all your indoctrinated thinking is just not still there? Right behind the door, just going, can you feel me? No, I'm not going to let in any new ideas, son. No, you need to keep doing this job. Yeah. Keep doing this job. Well, when do you want to give it up? Never. Just keep doing this job. Keep working. Keep doing what you were programmed to do. Don't resist the virus. In sweet mercy. It's almost like we're all developing schizophrenia. No, really? You ever felt that? Like you're torn between two worlds? Between what you hate and what you love? And you wind up picking what you hate to support most of the time? You know? Like, I love truth and honesty, so I vote for one side of a corrupt political spectrum. You know? Where are people getting these ideas? Well, I've got news for you. It's not their own idea. It's been funneled into them. I mean, literally. It's like somebody got a keg of beer and a hose attached to it and just shoved it down your gullet and turned the tap on. Boom. I mean, nothing left of you. I mean, picking pieces out of the teeth with a tree branch. Them giant scumbaggery and educational institution consuming your brain and rotting it. Apparently your frontal lobes don't even frickin' develop until you're like 25, and all the kids go to university long before that. No life experience, haven't gone on a big overseas experience or gotten a job for like a year or something like that to see what the workforce is like, or tried a bunch of different employment situations, or started to learn a little bit independently or whatever at home before you go out and decide what you want your entire career path to do with your life before you've even lived it. So we're forced into making decisions. Rushed into them. No wonder we don't make clear choices. No wonder we don't make good decisions. No wonder we elect the people that we do. I'm not blaming anybody. You got to blame yourself. I do. I blame me for everything. There's got to be some kind of reprieve from that guilt of just living in a society that you're not helping. Where is that guilty part for you? For me, it was like sitting there knowing that I could sell ice to an Eskimo over the phone, never having met anybody in my life, and making a killing. And in person too. And then, oh, this has another use. Explaining stuff to people that they need to hear, that other people are too cowardly or not wordy enough in order to tackle the task. And when you get invited on talk radio, and when you start yakking up a storm, and when people start really listening, you know that you're kind of doing something that you were born to do. And it was quite funny the other day, speaking about what you were born to do, protesting. I got a whole bunch of friends that like call themselves professional protesters. They're awesome people. You know, if you want some good friends for a good laugh or whatever, get to know some professional protesters. I'm telling you, these people are awesome. Very, very cool. And have you ever seen the movie 300? You know, where the 300 soldiers meet with the Greek soldiers and everything, and they're like, oh. Well, I did a couple of different panels of that, and it was quite funny. It just replaced the words in it. So, welcome to the protest. But I see you only brought a handful of protesters. You, over there, what is your profession? I'm a chartered accountant. And you, over there, what is your profession?
I'm a school teacher, sir.
And you?
Bartender.
And he turns to the crowd and he goes, protesters, what is your profession?
Oh, oh, oh. You see, old friend, I brought more protesters than you did.
I thought that was freaking hilarious. 300 protesters. I'm going to do that at a protest one day, man. It was so cool. It was like, imagine if you had, like a whole truckload of megaphones, all right? Batteries in all of them or whatever. And you get like about 20 people and you give them all a megaphone. And you do that kind of like as a skit. Because protesting's fun. Or at least it can be. Or at least I make them fun. Very fun. You know? What else is the point? Really? I mean, if you're in front of them, if you've got a giant voice amplification device and a big crowd that's agreeable and there for a good cause, why not make it a little bit more interesting? Why not make it something they're going to remember laughing about years to come? You know, that's the kind of thing. Life is something you just need to take advantage of sometimes. You know, why not? What do you got to lose? You're afraid that your eyebrows are going to fall off and not grow back if you have some fun? Don't think so, son. Where is the compulsion for people to live their lives and have absolutely nothing to show for it? Kind of like that scene in Transformers, where the Transformer turns into a car and opens its door after they first see what he really is. Giant alien robot. And they're like, he wants us to get in the car. And she's like, I don't know if I want to do that, bro. It's like, dude, 40 years from now, don't you want to be able to tell people that you had the guts to get in the car? I thought that was quite interesting. Because really, is it? Eminem talked about that in a song as well. If an opportunity in your life comes down to one moment where you capture it or just let it slip, it's kind of like we're sitting here in a perpetual cycle of letting stuff slip through our freaking fingers and at the same time being harassed for it, you know, by people who think they're better than us. Oh, you need to be doing this, you need to be doing that. You know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to help people be inspired, not motivated. Motivated means you need somebody there to keep tugging your chain or whatever. Come on, hurry up, carry out. Yeah. Oh, you're feeling bad there, sweetie. Oh, you need some help. You need some encouragement, do you? No. Hell with that. Let me give you zero hope. Zero hope but your own desire. Zero hope but your own volition. You're the only one who can save you. And hopefully you'll be inspired to do so. And maybe you might just save a few other people as well from certain death. Now, of course, death's certain. It's just how you go about it. What was it? I'm thinking of a lot of movie quotes right now for some reason. Was it Alien 3? Why should we put our ass on the line for you? Your ass is already on the line. The only question is, what are you going to do about it? That's the question you keep having to ask. I have to keep asking that to myself every day. What am I doing about it? I feel guilty if I'm not doing something. You know? Like if somebody calls me up out of the blue and they go, hey, Vinny, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm messing around arguing with people on Facebook. I feel guilty about that. Because I shouldn't be doing that. I should be producing something, you know? We're all freaking guilty. Totally guilty. But isn't it fun? We're all kind of like revels together. A little bit of revelry. Never hurt anybody. Now, when it comes down to it, though, how exactly does telling everybody else that they're worse off or being angry at people improve the situation? You know, a lot of the times it doesn't work out very well. It's fun if you're like a pack animal who likes seeing people be ripped apart or something of that nature. Because what was it? If you're going after a giant and you're just a man, that is inspiring stuff. Think about this. You remember the incident in Chile where David Rockefeller comes out of the plane and there's a Chilean truther there with a handy cam while Rockefeller's being wheeled out in his wheelchair. Leave Chile! Leave Chile! You're killing a lot of people! Oh man, that is awesome stuff. Because we like to see it, don't we? We like to see the bad guys having one of us in their face and calling them out for who they really are. We like seeing that a hell of a lot more than we like seeing one or two of our favorite talk radio show hosts exchanging gossip about each other over the interweb tabloids, making fake articles and BS like that. We actually like that raw, in your face. He was there. He did that. And he recorded it. We got to see it. And it was freaking awesome type vibe going on there. That's opportunity. And I remember I was at a National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML for short, conference called Colorado Calling. One of my listeners flew me down to Wellington on his own dime, paid for my hotel room, so I could just be there to film this very important NORML conference that they're having in a hotel with a proper lecture thing, and they had the microphones and everything set up. It was most elaborate NORML conference I've been to for a long time. Let me tell you what. And what happened there is, all the people involved had some kind of public standing, right? We're talking about reputable researchers, people who are members of parliament or candidates, scientists, researchers, drug counselors, that kind of thing, able to pull their resources and their clout so that they could educate each other. Now, these kind of instances happen all the time, but people aren't there to see them, and they're not talking to the bad guys. They're talking to the good guys and hoping that they'll be more educated and take some action themselves. Now, I'm wondering, does that motivate you to go take action yourselves by listening to somebody tell you what the problems are and who the bad guys are? Or is it more motivating to know already what the problems are, who the bad guys are, and see somebody like you, an ordinary person, taking it into their teeth and then showing it to you? That's inspiring stuff. I love that kind of thing. And having conversations with cops is like that. I mean, cops, oh my God. I don't want to offend all police officers, okay? I'm sure some of you who are retired aren't scumbags. I'm just joking. There's probably a few of you who are enlisted right now who are thinking about quitting because it's too freaking corrupt and you're hurting people. But when it comes down to it, what are you freaking doing? Because I have had a number of conversations with cops, reasonable cops, men who don't behave violently or corruptly, who actually genuinely appear to want to help their community and just going about their jobs. And when they come up to you, what's the first thing that even these decent men say? Turn the cameras off. They don't want to be on camera. And they tell you that because you're not on camera, that because you're refusing a camera or whatever, what have you got, something to hide? So, when you've got them on camera, you know, don't turn it the F off in order to, you know, make him more appeasing or more appealing or something of that nature. Keep it on. And you'll be surprised, but they stop acting so hostile a lot of the time, especially if you're calm and compliant and friendly to them, and you're not trying to be mean to them or get in the way of their duties. It's yes sir, no sir, three bags full sore. And by the way, there's a new world order of criminal scumbags that basically run your life and everybody else's, and they're going to kill us soon. You know, just slip it in there. You know. But the interactions you have with these people are quite fun. You know, protesters convince police 9/11 was an inside job. That's a video title you can search for. Protesters convince police 9/11 was an inside job. You can go search for that on my YouTube channel, or just, you know, search that title with Vinnie Eastwood. Police force Vinnie Eastwood to stop protesting John Key and GCSB. That protest went for about 10 minutes. And then the cop talked to me for about 20 minutes, you know, came up, told me to turn the megaphone off. I already had it turned off and told, you know, I'm just kind of like well ahead of the protocol I am. I make it real easy for them to have nothing on me. No reason to make them angry. No reason for anything. You know why I do that? Two reasons. There's only two types of people that I'm afraid of in this world. Criminal gangs and the police, who are incidentally run like a gang. Do you mess with gang members in their own home? No, you do not, son. Because they will beat you, or kidnap you, or harass you, or something. And the same is true of police. I have respect for the law, just not the laws. Why would anybody? Really, considering what it's going up to, the only resolution you want, ultimately, with a police officer is, he's on his way, and you're on yours, and there was no physical exchange, there was no handcuffs, and there's no nastiness. That's the ideal interaction with a police officer. Wouldn't you say? And people like to see that too. Just as much as you like hearing people yell at really bad sociopathic scumbags and expose them for what they are, we also like to see those people who are so often generalized as bad people, like police officers, etc., actually sitting there having fun with you, having a laugh, being human. I think we crave to see that. I think we crave to see our subjugators in a more human light, to realize that they really aren't all bad. It's not just a realization, it's seeing the evidence for yourself. Seeing somebody tell you to turn the camera off, and even though you didn't, wind up having an amicable, honest, and fun conversation, and get a laugh out of them. That's cool, man. People love that stuff. And, you know, it's only happened to me a couple of times. But I still remember it very vividly, and the videos, comparative, like, to how long they are or whatever, they're extraordinarily popular. You know, 10,000, 20,000 hits or something of that nature. And there's no real famous person involved. It's just some nobody activist talking nicely with a cop. I think that's really cool. So we don't have to be a douche or mean or cruel or insulting to the frontliners, because often they're not the ones with the special markings on their shoulders and the ones really calling the shots, who the ones that I have talked to have resorted to force probably the fastest. Lower rank cops, they resort to force only if you're being an idiot. In my experience anyway, in the United States, that's very different indeed. The amount of videos that I've seen of them viciously assaulting people for no reason. In fact, it happens in New Zealand all the time as well. But it usually happens when you don't have a camera rolling. That's the best advice I've ever heard from a cop. I think it was Barry Cooper or somebody else. When you're talking to your lawyer, when you're talking to a police officer, when you're talking to anybody, where it's your word against theirs, they'll win. You got to be recording it. At all times. Slippery slope. Sure. But if you whip out a camera and they try to put your camera away, it makes them look real dodgy because your camera's already rolling. And then if you put your camera down and then keep recording, and they don't know that it's still recording, you get all the audio. So if they say any corrupt things or whatever, you've got them. And it's not their word versus yours anymore. It's the evidence versus the testimony. And if the testimony don't match up with the evidence, it's not you that's at fault, it's them. You know? Treat it like you would a snake, you know? Have you ever seen Steve Irwin, Crocodile Hunter? Apparently he had a special place in his heart for stingrays, but he'd grab these snakes, right, and he'd go, oh, isn't he beautiful? Oh, my God, look at the poison oozing out of his fangs. the dude's a legend. Like, nobody has that much guts. Nobody. And that's how you got to kind of be with the cops, you know?
Oh, isn't he beautiful? Isn't he beautiful? Oh, look at that. Look at that steroids pumping through his system, watching his little tiny low IQ brain whirl as I unveil my magic.
You know, cops are people too. And you know what cops told me? People are stupid. It was just one time after Occupy Auckland got busted up by private security because the... And the inner reason, like, got busted up by private security, don't you? I'm not sure if the same thing happened in the real Occupy Wall Street, but this is how it happened in Auckland. Because the Auckland Central District Police Commander said that they have a lawful right to protest and the police cannot evict them. So they got the private security to do it and the police to watch! When that same commissioner was off on holiday for a week! And I saw these three cops walking off, and I like go up to them and I say, "Do you like what happened here? Does this seem like a free country?" And one of them laughs at me and he says, "Do you really think you live in a free country?" One of the older cops, you know, he kind of knows what's up. I mean, you know, there's something to be said for pretending to be naive and seeing what people say. I've got these really, really fun aspirations and ideas and imaginative things that I'd love to do at protests or anything like. But I'll probably never have these happen in real life. So what you do is you kind of like save them up for things that are in fantasy. Like if you're writing a novel or a screenplay or something like that, you know, and you want to put it into a movie in a fictional context where it belongs, where it's a lot less dangerous than doing it for real. And I had this idea that I'd get real buff, like super buff, you know? Like one of those guys that is literally like a mountain of muscle bearing down on you. And then I'll be at a protest or whatever, and two cops unlawfully try to arrest me. And they grab onto one arm each, and they go, you know, trying to get me down to the ground. And I just lift my arms up very, very gently and slowly and lift both of them off of the ground while they're holding onto my arm. I'm 6'4". I can do this to people who are a few inches shorter than me. And just go, "Look, gentlemen, if you want me to do something for you, you only need to ask. You won't get resisted or anything. Now I'm just going to put you down now. There you go. What would you like me to do for you?" You know? Imagine that if... Well, the idea came to me is like about strength and power being used in tandem with gentleness. You know? I thought that was always one thing that I always wanted to be, is really hugely powerful but incredibly gentle. Don't like hurting people. I don't like being hurt. It's just not my bag, baby. There's some people out there who love to hurt. Love to be hurt. Just not one of them. More than enough people like that in the world. Don't need one more. Without question, if you're devoting your life to the to causing pain and suffering in the lives of others, you don't really deserve your life. I wouldn't kill you myself. But ultimately, that's what a lot of people deserve. Such as their respect for human life, i.e. none. They'd kill a baby if they could get away with it. Stab it right through its beautiful little eyes. The cruelty and neglect. And I don't know about everybody else's life, but for me it seems like cruelty and neglect kind of cascades downwards. You ever seen those big champagne pyramids that they've got in those movies where they've got like some swanky buffet and some dude's like on a ladder pouring giant bottles of champagne into it and it like starts to fill into all the glasses below? It's kind of like that. Because you can imagine what the elite go through in their childhoods with the abuse they might suffer. Because I was like thinking about, what was it, serial killers. And almost all of them have sexual child abuse or something of that nature in their background, committed upon them by their parents in order to turn them into some kind of a psychopathic killer that has no respect for human life. And I think this probably happens to the elite as children as well. Just think about that. I mean, I'm not saying feel compassionate for them, because they're way past the point of having compassion actually help them. They've changed into something and they cannot change back. That's what people talk about when they talk about their family members coming back from a cult. It's not the same person they remember. And that person is gone forever. And all that is left is kind of like a possessed shell of a human being that their very existence causes pain, suffering, and death among society. You can't preach violence, you can't preach hatred, but you can understand the reality that somebody who is so far gone that they don't even qualify as human anymore doesn't deserve their life nowhere near as much as the people they abuse and kill for their own selfish desire. You've been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. .com. Thank you very much for doing so. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Love you all, and I will see you again sometime, assuredly.